In this present crisis, government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem.
This is the I Spy Radio Show.
You and I have a rendezvous with destiny.
Keeping an eye on big government.
We the people tell the government what to do. It doesn't tell us.
The trouble with our liberal friends is not that they're ignorant. It's just that they know so much that isn't so.
And now, here is your host, Mark Anderson.
And welcome. This is the I Spy Radio Show, and this is a very special one because it is our annual 4th of July show. Every year, we take a look back at Independence Day, the celebrations, unique events, and occurrences. We've looked at things like those early celebrations and what they were like and how some of those traditions have rolled down to us today. We've looked at celebrating July 4th on the Oregon Trail. We've examined the Declaration of Independence itself, the rights and grievances listed therein. We've taken a look at some of the signers of the Declaration. And 2 years ago, we took an in-depth look at George Washington, who was so central to America's independence. And we've also looked at July 4th during turbulent times, like how it was celebrated during the Civil War and the first 50 years, because there was a lot of doubt we'd even make it that far. America, so often through so much of its history, seems to be riding out the storm of freedom, because freedom is never easy. Defending your freedom is never easy. It's like Ben Franklin said, a republic if you can keep it. As usual, we'll just kind of go where the discussion takes us, but one area that we will dig into a little bit is to take a look at how the presidents themselves have celebrated the 4th of July, it being a presidential election year. These are always my favorite shows of the year, and they always feature one of our favorite guests, Greg Leo. He is a government and public affairs consultant to governments, tribes, corporations, and individuals, and he's our expert on the 4th of July because he's an avid amateur historian. Greg, welcome back to the show.
Thank you, Mark. It's great to be on, and celebrate your freedom, everybody.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, as always, we have way more material to possibly discuss than we could ever possibly get through, but I'm definitely looking forward to today's show. And you know, so the 4th of July, of course, is all about the Declaration of Independence, although we still had a war to win. It's one thing to declare your independence. It's quite another to stand up to the biggest superpower in the world at the time and actually win that war for independence. You know, because Britain, they were not going to just let us go off on our own without a fight. And so the Declaration really wouldn't have meant anything if we had not won that war. How do you think the Declaration would have been remembered in history had we not won that war and not won our independence? I mean, would it have been even remembered at all?
I think it probably would not have had the Revolutionary War been lost. And of course, it was a near-run thing. It almost was lost. And if we read the Declaration at Shampui at our, you know, 4th of July celebration there each year, and when you read it out loud amongst people, you realize it's a list of grievances. Mm-hmm. And those grievances were soul deep. And the importance of what the Congress said about why this was being done and, you know, what offenses the British had really exercised on the Americans was such an important reason. But anyway, the Second Continental Congress adopted it on the 2nd of July. The vote was actually on the 2nd, and it was adopted by the whole body on July 4th. And that creates a discrepancy that even our founding fathers could not agree on.
Well, the first vote, was that just sort of like a vote out of committee type thing, or was that by the whole Congress?
That's when the Congress actually voted on the language. And then, it took a day or two for the Scribners to write it up and then for them to take the final vote on adoption. Hmm. So it was like we would call it a third reading in our current legislative process. So, you know, Adams would not celebrate the 4th of July. You know, John Adams would say, oh, no, it really was the 2nd of July that should be celebrated. People would invite him to the 4th of July and said, no, I'm going to celebrate on the 2nd. The rest of the world, you know, including Jefferson, the primary drafter of the Declaration, they chose the 4th because that was when it was adopted and really read aloud for the first time to the people of Philadelphia.
Well, as far as that first vote is concerned, I'm not sure why he's fixated on that, but, you know, Adams was kind of a weird guy in some ways, I guess.
and he and Jefferson, of course, were always pretty much at odds. And
yes.
You know, if you, you know, watch the excellent materials on John Adams and read the book, you know that he was a kind of a prickly porcupine, but that's what it took to have the kind of change that won us the independence and the freedom that we enjoy today.
Well, so of course the Declaration did not actually start the war. The war had been going on since April 19th, 1775, and on July 4th, 1776, so basically a year and a couple of months. The initial reading of the Declaration of Independence was pretty interesting. This is from the Mount Vernon Foundation, and it says the troops rejoiced upon hearing the document. The Declaration was read at the head of each brigade and was received with three huzzas by the troops. And on July 9th, 1776, because, of course, it took a while for things to get around back in those days, the Declaration of Independence was read aloud to the Continental troops mustered at the Commons on Manhattan Island, an open field 1 mile uptown from Bowling Green. The reading of the Declaration led to such uproarious enthusiasm that soldiers sprinted down Broadway afterward and committed an act of vandalism. They toppled the equestrian statue of George III at Bowling Green, decapitating it, and then parading the head around town to the lilting beat of fifes and drums.
Take that, King George.
Yeah.
And that enthusiasm happens today as well. When we read the Declaration, where we break it out into 62 different parts, individual people read it, and we encourage them to read it with gusto, because it really is, you know, a list of complaints against the British Crown. And although there are some words like consanguation and other words that are kind of tongue twisters and not well known in current language, the main meaning is there. And people are enthusiastic even today when they read the Declaration. I encourage everybody to read it on the 4th. It's just one of the great things to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, the first anniversary of the Declaration was kind of interesting. There's a write-up from the Pennsylvania Evening Post, and they said this: yesterday, the 4th of July, being the anniversary of the independence of the United States of America, was celebrated in this city with demonstrations of joy and festivity. About noon, all of the armed ships and galleys in the river were drawn up before the city, dressed in the gayest manner with the colors of the United States and streamers displayed. At 1 o'clock, the yards being properly manned, they began the celebration of the day by a discharge of 13 cannon from each of the ships and one from each of the 13 galleys in honor of the 13 United States. The evening was closed with the ringing of bells, and at night there was a grand exhibition of fireworks, which began and concluded with 13 rockets on the commons, and the city was beautifully illuminated. I mean, you hear that, and it just makes you want to be there.
And it feels very much like what we do to this very day. And, you know, the tradition of fireworks and picnics and public celebrations, you know, where we're really, we come together as, you know, a civic body, and we celebrate freedom. And it's just, it is a wonderful thing. And I think a touchstone for all Americans.
Hmm. Well, you know, I said that John Adams was a bit of a weird little guy sometimes, but he really did love this country. I mean, he was very much a patriot. He just kind of saw the country differently than a lot of other people did, certainly differently than what Jefferson ever did. But there was an interesting letter that I came across from John Adams to his wife in 1777 on that first anniversary. And with, you know, the Revolutionary War was underway at that point. Here's a future president describing his day and night of spontaneous celebrations there in Philadelphia, in a letter to his wife Abigail. And so after hours of parading troops and the fireworks and bonfires and music, he tells her that he strolled alone in the dark at night. And he said, "I was walking about the streets for a little fresh air and exercise, and was surprised to find the whole city lighting up their candles at the windows. I walked most of the evening, and I think it was the most splendid illumination I ever saw. A few surly houses were dark, but the lights were very universal. Considering the lateness of the design and the suddenness of the execution, I was amazed at the universal joy and alacrity that was discovered and the brilliancy and splendor of every part of this joyful exhibition." So there you go.
There's, so beautifully written. And the candle in the window being that flickering hope of freedom.
Yes.
That was not won. And frankly, not everybody agreed. So much like even today, a third of the public was Tory. A third of the public didn't care. Maybe 12% of the public were patriots. And so over time, it was the patriots who were able to persuade other members of colonial America to fight the British Crown, but not everybody agreed. And even as they were negotiating the end of the war, there are questions about what happens to the property and, you know, to the people who didn't agree. And of course, many of them went to Canada.
Yes. Yep. All right. It is time for a break. Everyone stay with us. We'll have more with Greg Leo talk about the 4th of July. And welcome back. This is the iSpy Radio Show, and this is our annual 4th of July show, and we're talking with Greg Leo, as we do every year. He's a government and public affairs consultant, and he's also an avid historian. And so, Greg, there's been a lot of momentous events that have happened on the 4th of July, not least of which is the fact that we have the 4th of July. But there's also been some odd confluences on the 4th of July. We had three presidents die on the 4th.
Yes.
Thomas Jefferson and John Adams both died on the same day, July 4th, 1826. That was the 50th anniversary. So they didn't just die on the same calendar day. They died on the anniversary, and not just on any anniversary. It was the 50th anniversary. And on that day, John Adams' son was the president serving
exactly.
the White House. And so talk about a weird day.
On the 4th of July, 1826, on the 50th anniversary, both Thomas Jefferson and John Adams died. Thomas Jefferson's last words were supposed to be, "Does Adams live?"
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they both knew that it was the end. The story is that the messengers from each, from Braintree, Massachusetts, and from Monticello in Virginia met, or actually, came together at Philadelphia, at the hall where the Declaration was, considered and approved.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just one of those kind of spectacular things that on the 50th anniversary, two of the primary people with the Declaration would die. Interestingly, James Madison, also who's involved as a founding father,
yes.
Died on July 4th, 1831. And so we do see kind of a pattern in the presidential deaths, three of them,
mm-hmm.
It's kind of the passing of a torch from that generation.
Well, there have been other coincidences among the presidents. James Polk and Warren Harding were both born on the same day, November 2nd, but very different years. And then Millard Fillmore and William Taft both died on the same day, March 8th, and also different years. Although Calvin Coolidge was born on July 4th, 1872.
Calvin, you just got to love Calvin Coolidge.
Yeah.
I'll keep
very underrated.
And really president at a time of, prosperity and peace after the First World War. And, absolutely many of the things that we have today, of course, came together with Calvin Coolidge, did not have to worry about the Depression or, the Second World War. So, yes, but the 4th of July seems to be a theme throughout presidential history.
Yeah, absolutely. And we'll talk about how some of the presidents celebrated the 4th later on here. But, one other president died not on the 4th, but died as a result of 4th of July celebrations. And this
right.
was Zachary Taylor, who came to national fame as a war hero, both in the War of 1812 and later the Mexican-American War, and that was from 1846 to 1848. He was elected later that year and started serving in 1849 as the 12th president. But he died just 16 months into his presidency. And the story goes is that he was attending 4th of July celebrations in Washington, D.C., including the groundbreaking ceremony for the Washington Monument. And two years previously, they had laid the ceremonial cornerstone. This was, they're actually doing the groundbreaking, and there was a bunch of speeches. Blazing hot day from all accounts, and sat out there for 2 hours as these speeches were. And we know what that was like. They loved to give their speeches there. And but then afterwards, he went for a walk along the Potomac, I guess probably to cool down. But then he returned to the White House in desperate need of a cold drink. He was not a drinker. We know that they used to drink an awful lot of the cider and whiskey and wine and a bunch of other things as part of the 4th of July celebrations, much as we do today. But anyway, he decided to have some ice cold milk and had a bowl of juicy cherries. And then later that night, he began experiencing some severe stomach pains that lasted in the morning and then ended up dying 5 days later. And according to the official autopsy, he had succumbed to cholera. It was an infection of his stomach there caused by a bacteria commonly found in fruit and dairy. Although there was a lot of speculation that someone had poisoned him with arsenic, and that was not debunked until 1991, officially debunked, when his body was exhumed and tested.
So it also gives rise to a piece of lore called the Tecumseh Curse. The lore is that there was a curse put on the American president, on the leader, that in a cyclical way there would be a series of deaths, assassinations, and other ill things that would befall the American president after Zachary Taylor. And that went on up to Ronald Reagan. Ronald Reagan surviving his gunshot wound is, in theory, the way that the Tecumseh curse finally was broken. Not that we necessarily believe in it. It probably is, you know, circumstantial. But the thing about it is Zachary Taylor played a more interesting role in our history than many people know.
Hmm. Well, it was he's such an interesting character that, you know, to find out that he had died as a result of his own unique 4th of July celebrations and, you know, not succumbing to a lot of drinking and, you know, that sort of thing that you could see might normally lead to death. But this is just somebody enjoying some cherries and some cold milk after a long, hot day. But anyway, that led to just some rabbit trails that I went down.
Everybody take it easy out there. Cherries are in season.
That's right. Be careful with your 4th of July celebrations for sure.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yeah. Maybe you need to soak them in whiskey or something first, but,
just be careful.
Yeah, there you go. But, anyway, earlier in that year, in February of 1850, he had held a rather stormy conference with Southern leaders, who had threatened secession. And he told them that if necessary to enforce the laws, he personally, and, you know, of course, this is a former general, he personally would lead the army. And persons taken in rebellion against the Union, he said he would hang with less reluctance than he had hanged deserters and spies in Mexico. Yeah. So, tough guy.
Tough, very tough. Well, and, of course, that theme goes on through the Civil War.
Sure.
Where the question of slavery, many say the great flaw in, you know, the Constitution, then, of course, became the Civil War over time. And so 1863 was just a major turning point. On the 4th of July, we see that, you know, Grant takes Vicksburg, dividing, you know, the country at the Mississippi River after a 47-day siege, splits the Confederacy on that day. You know, then at the 4th of July was, you know, Lee admitted that Meade had turned him back at Gettysburg, fighting a deadly 3-day battle, which was seen by many as the high tide of the rebellion, turning back the last Confederate invasion of the North. And so the Civil War at that time, where they're dealing with the question of slavery, they're really making it, you know, America from these United States to the United States, creating a more perfect union, is really kind of the time when the 4th of July played a key role.
Hmm. Well, at the time when he had died, he'd had a number of enemies, not least of which in Congress, because to get around the question of slavery in California, he encouraged them to bypass the whole territorial process and go straight to statehood. And of course, Congress wants to be involved in everything as much then as certainly as they do now. But you can see between fighting off the people there in the South and being hardball with them, then enemies in Congress, you could certainly see why a lot of people just assumed he'd been poisoned.
Yeah, exactly.
So, okay, let's go and take a break there. Lots more to talk about with Greg Leo talking about July 4th. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's our annual 4th of July show, our 14th annual 4th of July show, and we're doing that with Greg Leo, an amateur historian and our guest every year for these 4th of July shows. Greg is a public affairs consultant for governments, tribes, corporations, and individuals. If you need help untangling the web of government and politics, then Greg is your guy. Just go to theleocompany.com, theleocompany.com, and you can contact Greg there. So, Greg, just one other thought there about Zachary Taylor. You know, he had played hardball to keep the states together and basically threatened the South that he was going to invade them personally if they rebelled. But what was interesting was after the South did secede, his only son, Richard, ended up serving as a general in the Confederate Army.
It is ironic and interesting, but he did, I think, born in Kentucky and was from Tennessee, considered the Westerner, but, you know, it's a border state. So not surprisingly, that generation, a lot of sons of, you know, presidents and others would go to West Point. And, you know, that they would have alliances. There would be the Southerners who would keep together, hang together, even though they had fought together in the Mexican War. Everyone played a role in that, but then would split up. So a lot of historians think the South had better generals but the North had more resources, a lot of talent in the Southern generals. And I think Zachary Taylor's son is a good example of that.
Yeah, absolutely. So one of the things I know that we've talked about in the past, but it's still fun to talk about, is how we've celebrated the Fourth down through the years. And you know, they started the method of celebrating the Fourth in the past. We've talked about how speeches were such a big part of the Fourth and reading the Declaration of Independence, which unfortunately we don't do as much as we ought to. Although I know you guys read the Declaration there at your celebration at Shampooey Park. But, you know, you also have picnics and certainly drinking for a lot of people, a lot of drinking for a lot of people, and parades and fireworks. And these just all became traditional and traditions. And a lot of that has really stuck down through the years. But, you know, I don't know if I've ever asked you this, but how did we all come to celebrate the Fourth in pretty much the same way? I mean, were other public events celebrated in this same way that we celebrate the Fourth? You know, well, that's just sort of the way things were celebrated, and that just morphed into the Fourth, or was it that the Fourth was always uniquely celebrated?
No, I think it's pretty similar to the way the Founding Fathers and the Patriots in the colonial times celebrated. It was the fireworks, the picnics, the civic celebrations, the dances. They were public events, and it was all about celebration. So when we see these beautiful fireworks displays these days, it's the rocket's red glare. It's the fact that freedom wasn't free. It had to be earned. It had to be fought for, paid for in blood on the battlefield, and that rocket really was symbolic of that struggle. Hmm. So it is, I think, very similar. And frankly, I think our civic life, you know, is pretty similar to the way things always have been in America. And that is that we have different points of view, different interests. And the one thing we can all come together on once a year is our freedom. And this is a celebration of freedom.
Well, as I mentioned, drinking and a whole lot of drinking has always been a big part of celebrating July 4th. But just to give an idea of how well our founding fathers knew how well they knew how to party. This is according to military.com, and it's not the Declaration, but it's when the Constitution was signed, they had an epic party that resulted in one of history's greatest bar tabs. The 55 members, the 55 members of the Constitutional Convention drank 54 bottles of Madeira, 60 bottles of Claret, 8 bottles of whiskey, 22 bottles of porter, 8 bottles of hard cider, 12 bottles of beer, and 7 bowls of alcoholic punch. And that added up to a bar bill of the equivalent of, in 2020 money, $17,253, meaning that each delegate consumed about $313 worth of the hard stuff.
No wonder we have amendments to the Constitution. They probably forgot some things, right?
Really?
No, book about Prohibition, Last Call, has a chapter about what drinking was like in colonial America. Everybody had a cider barrel outside their door. I mean, because the nature of water wasn't good in many cases, a lot of people did have distilled spirits just in order to get hydrated. But the amount of liquor that was drank at these events is amazing, is not necessarily healthy. And remember, life expectancy was much shorter than it is today.
Yeah. Well, you could certainly see why, I guess. You know, even before he became president, Washington in 1778, so this is 2 years after the Declaration, and 5 years before the end of the war, he decided to celebrate Independence Day with his troops by giving them all a double ration of rum. And I didn't know this, but I did know that Washington liked to drink. He, in fact, made beer a staple on his own plantation there. But at the time, he also had, I think, the largest whiskey distillery either in the States or certainly in the state of Virginia.
Yeah.
So
yeah, he was known for distilling, of course, all sorts of spirits, but he also had grape and, you know, other kinds of materials that he would make alcohol out of. And it was just, I think, part of that culture. And the ration of rum really is a British Royal Navy tradition that came over to the colonial troops, where a lot of times rum is considered medicinal and part of your daily ration. That's just what you fed the troops to make sure the troops were well cared for. So they had a really different point of view about that then. But it is still an opportunity to celebrate. And the idea that people are going to have picnics, have parties, you know, have something to drink, watch fireworks, that to today is still part of that 4th of July culture of celebration.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I also mentioned that they celebrated by speeches, and a young Teddy Roosevelt in 1886 gave what historians regard as his first great national public speech. And it was at the first ever 4th of July celebration in Dickinson, when Dakota was still a territory. And just a little bit of an excerpt from that, he says, "Like all Americans, I like big things. Big parades, big forests and mountains, big wheat fields, railroads and herds of cattle too, big factories, steamboats and everything else. But we must keep steadily in mind that no people were ever yet benefited by riches if their property corrupted their virtue. It is more important that we should show ourselves honest, brave, truthful, and intelligent than that we should all own all of the railroads and grain elevators in the world. I am myself at heart as much a Westerner as I am an Easterner. I am proud indeed to be considered one of yourselves, and I address you in this rather solemn strain today only because my pride in you and because your welfare, moral as well as material, is so near to my heart." And you can tell he was such a great orator, although, as I understand it, he had a rather squeaky voice in person.
He did. And what recordings exist, it's amazing, the high pitch and kind of nasally sound. But the words are strong, and he left a strong impression on the people of Dakota, who honor him to this day. And his theme, though, about Americanism and, you know, everyone working together in the country for the greater good was a huge theme for Theodore Roosevelt, which left a big mark on the country.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, it is time for a break. When we come back, we're going to look at some of the ways those presidents celebrated 4th of July. Stay with us. And welcome back. It's our annual 4th of July show. We're doing that with Greg Leo. He is a government and public affairs consultant to governments, tribes, corporations, and individuals, and he's been our expert on the 4th of July because he's such an expert historian. And you can find out more about him by heading to theleocompany.com. And so, Greg, we were talking about how some of these presidents have celebrated the 4th of July down through the year. We mentioned how Washington was certainly a big drinker. He made sure that his troops were well-armed in that regard. And certainly on his own plantation, he was, as I mentioned, had the biggest still, I think, in America. You mentioned previously that John Adams did not celebrate July 4th, and he really thought that July 2nd ought to be the day that we should be celebrating. When he was president, did he end up celebrating on the 4th? Because by then it was kind of expected, oh yeah, we celebrate on the 4th.
He did not. No, he would pass on 4th of July celebrations and do something in a quieter, more reserved way on the 2nd, which was, unusual, but typically John Adams, you know, sticking to what he believed was the principle and not celebrate that way.
Mm.
But other presidents did, and yeah, the country did. So, you know, jumping forward to 1876, the 100th anniversary, we had the first World's Fair, really the Philadelphia Centennial Exposition. That was at the end of, you know, General Grant's first term as president. And it was really set the model for all these future World's Fairs. And this was really a big national celebration in Philadelphia to celebrate that first 100 years of the country. Such a big celebration that the suffragettes made their first big protest by coming to that Centennial Exposition and protesting for equal voting rights. Clearly, at its 100th birthday, America was coming to age.
Well, how was that received, that the suffragettes were protesting on the 4th?
It was a quizzical question for many, because suffrage was a brand new idea at that time. And of course, it would take another 50 years, what, until 1912, before the country, you know, fully embraced women's right to vote. So, but, you know, things happen over time in a democracy, and this was kind of the first coming out of that idea in a formal way. But the World's Fair really, you know, created many other things. It was really America filling out with immigrants, commerce beefing up, this vast natural resources of the country being focused. America was just kind of growing into its new clothes at that time.
Well, and of course, it started to become more and more a leading economy. And so much of it had to do with our freedom. where people Absolutely. Could work their way to the top rather than, you know, very different from places like Britain or the rest of Europe, where it's generational wealth or landed gentry or being born to the right bloodline. A person of little or no means in America could become extremely wealthy in their own lifetime. And that was unheard
of. Well said. And the entrepreneur had the opportunity, the natural resources provided the material. We had the growth of capital markets where people could actually borrow money in order to implement new ideas. The railroads spread across the country. You know, in every corner of the country, prosperity was starting to happen. So from all the farms and fields to the factories, America was becoming the America that we know today.
Yeah, absolutely. So just getting back to how some of the presidents had celebrated, you mentioned that Adams did not, but Jefferson, when he got elected, he did celebrate the 4th of July very much. And, you know, we've talked in the past about the bad blood, not just during this show, but in previous shows, about the bad blood between Adams and Jefferson. And they were very bitter rivals, later became steadfast friends. But, of course, Adams, he almost seemed too willing to embrace a heavy-handed authoritarian federal government, and he was really infamous for wanting to jail his political rivals, much like we see today, and push through things like the Alien and Sedition Act, which made it a crime for American citizens to print, utter, or publish any false, scandalous, or malicious writings about the government. And those laws were directed in particular against his rival party, the Democrat Republicans, and under those laws, only journalists that were editors of the Democratic Republican newspapers were the only ones that were prosecuted. So there was a very cantankerous election in 1800 between Adams and Jefferson.
And that's the way the political party system in America kind of emerged. So Washington, you know, first in war, first in peace, first in the hearts of his countrymen, was a unifying force. With Washington off the scene, we saw that we had, you know, agrarian populist versus more centralized government, and those evolved into the Democrat and Republican parties over time. But that election of 1800 was one of the harshest, most difficult elections.
Yes.
A lot of people ask me, oh, aren't we living in the worst of times for our democracy? And I say, no.
Yeah.
The people in 1800 really fought it out in a way that makes today's politics look relatively mild.
Sure. You'd have actual duels between people over politics, and people certainly lost their lives over those. So John Adams was the first president.
We didn't succumb to the conflict. We thrived on the conflict because people could have opposing ideas but still hear each other enough to be able to maintain a democratic republic.
Yeah, absolutely. So John Adams was the first president to live in the White House. But by the time independence rolled around in 1801, he, of course, had lost his office, making Jefferson the first to celebrate the 4th in the White House. And he decided to go all out. He hosted a public reception where he greeted citizens and diplomats and even a group of Cherokee chiefs in the Blue Room. And then on the north grounds of the White House, they had horse racing along with festivals and food and all kinds of stuff.
It's great. And of course, we have similar events nowadays on the Capitol Mall, and you know, the way that Washington celebrates the 4th of July is spectacular. Mm-hmm. You know, we always generally have a concert right at the foot of Capitol Hill, and even today it becomes that kind of almost week-long celebration. If one hasn't experienced, you know, that national celebration in Washington, D.C., they should do that sometime, because it really is every corner of America is represented.
That would be really cool to go to. I have not been there personally myself during that time. Just real quick before we take our break, even after that animosity between the two parties and everything else, and after that cantankerous election, according to the July 6th edition of D.C.'s first newspaper, the National Intelligencer, describing that Jeffersonian celebration, he said, "A spirit of general amity threw a magnanimous mantle of oblivion over past political differences, and all present, without distinction of sect, offered and received cordial felicitations." So a fancy way of saying, hey, everybody came together and we all celebrated America. So, all right, we will continue to do that. More Celebrating America and the 4th with Greg Leo. And welcome back. It's our annual 4th of July show, and we're talking with Greg Leo, He's our in-house historian, as we like to think of him, but in real life and actuality, he is a public affairs consultant. He does work on behalf of governments, tribes, corporations, and individuals. If you need help in that area, you can get in touch with him by heading to theleocompany.com. And in case you missed that, we'll put links to his website on our website, iSpyRadio.com, iSpyRadio.com. Today's show is 14-26. And so, Greg, just another little tidbit here from how presidents have celebrated. There was this one from President Polk in 1848, and he had guests at the White House, including former First Lady Dolly Madison. And then later he witnessed the laying of the cornerstone of the Washington Monument with future President Lincoln in attendance.
Yeah.
And it was followed by a military parade. That was when they had laid the ceremonial one. And just to read this, because again, you know, we celebrate the 4th, have traditionally with all of these speeches. And this was from, it was the Freemasons that were laying the cornerstone. And I'm not exactly sure who gave this speech. It may have been Washington's grandson, I think, through his adopted son. Anyway, someone said, "No more Washingtons shall come in our time, but his virtues are stamped on the heart of mankind. He who is great in battlefield looks upward to the generalship of Washington. He who grows wise in counsel feels that he is imitating Washington. He who can resign power against the wishes of a people has in his eye the bright example of Washington." And what a moving speech. I just love
that. Wow. So great. And of course, he was the essential one.
Yeah, so absolutely. Well,
the thing about the 4th of July is that at each of these milestones in our history, we, you know, celebrate freedom. We celebrate it. We test it. It's been tested and confirmed again and again throughout our history. You know, we celebrate in both frivolous and thoughtful ways. I mean, you know, all of the commercial stuff sometimes seems a little inappropriate, but also we can be very thoughtful about our freedoms and what it takes to keep. This is a presidential year. There'll be new choices for America. We're evolving as a democracy and as a country. But the themes of freedom and independence and making our own choices as a people are still strong. That is what gives me great hope for America.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you had mentioned that we tend to celebrate in frivolous ways sometimes. And I had looked for frivolous ways that people have celebrated. But just a couple of quick little interesting tidbits. The oldest annual 4th of July celebration is held in Bristol, Rhode Island. It's been going every year uninterrupted since 1785. And
wow.
Around the country, there are 15,000 Independence Fire Day fireworks celebrations every year. Americans consume about 150 million hot dogs while celebrating Independence Day. And according to the National Hot Dog and Sausage Council, that many hot dogs can stretch from Washington, D.C., to Los Angeles 5 times over.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. No, America does love a good picnic and, you know, great picnic food and great traditions as, you know, Oregonians gather in backyards and rodeo grounds across the country, I mean, across our great state celebrating, then know that this is something that people have done for now almost 250 years.
Yeah. Yeah. And it really is cool. And I definitely want to talk to you about that 250-year celebration in the next segment. But just a few more bits here from how presidents have celebrated. On July 4th, 1868, earlier we talked about Gettysburg, Andrew Johnson executes a proclamation granting amnesty to those who had fought for the Confederacy, which
yeah.
I think is pretty cool. And, you know, just the return to Gettysburg, that was from
July 4th. He was, of course, impeached. A lot of people, I don't know if people saw the Manhunt program that was on Apple TV recently, but, you know, it was all the story of Johnson and how Johnson had run with Lincoln, but then didn't agree with, you know, the Reconstruction plans that the Lincoln administration had. And eventually that became for Lincoln's Congress and Johnson was impeached. So, his amnesty was given to, you know, people that were considered rebels by the North, and he paid a political price for that.
Hmm. Well, you know, earlier you had mentioned Gettysburg, and that took place July 1st through the 3rd in 1863. If that had gone over, you know, let's say it ended up being a 5-day war, do you think they would have fought on the 4th, or would they have had kind of an amnesty, much the way that you saw kind of an unofficial Christmas armistice in World War One?
After 3 days at Gettysburg, if Meade had not stopped, Lee at Gettysburg, they would have captured the capital of Pennsylvania, Harrisburg, and there was a effort to have a immediate settlement, basically to have a agreement that would have ended the war. The question is, could Lincoln and the pro-Union North hold it together? And so Pennsylvania was a key state, and sure, had the capital of Pennsylvania fell to Lee, and that's the whole point of Gettysburg, is that Lee was driving north in order to drive a wedge in the mm-hmm. north and to break it apart politically so they could sue for a settlement. Sure.
But if that battle had lasted longer than it had and gone on to the 4th of July, do you think they would have had a ceasefire?
No, I think they, and having been to Gettysburg and walked the field several times, I can tell you both sides were at it down to the last man. Hmm. And the greatest evidence of that was Pickett's charge. I mean, the way that Longstreet was, told to throw everything he had against the copse of trees and, the hill there on Seminary Ridge, you could just tell that this was the high point. This was, really the battle for it all. It's like they were both all in. The idea that they'd lay down their weapons and take a day off is, I don't think, ever in the cards at Gettysburg. Mm. It was about winning at all costs.
Yeah. Well, just one other thing. In July 4th, 1913, President Wilson traveled to Gettysburg, PA for a 4th of July battle reunion speech. So that would have been pretty awesome to have those veterans come together. So
American history. There's Wilson, the Southerner. He's got, Union veterans, Confederate veterans, kind of the last time that, because of their age, they could get together. He gives a magnificent speech, and they join hands. And really kind of, that's the final healing, I think, we see of the war, where the final time of that generation to really make their peace and shake hands.
Well, it's just cool, again, that it happened. It's just cool that it happened on July 4th, where once again we're uniting this country. And that's really, I think, what the July 4th celebration is so much about. And coming up, we're going to be talking about the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration of Independence. Stay with us. And welcome back. These segments have flown by, and we are now into our last and final one here with Greg Leo, talking about the 4th of July. And Greg, coming up, this is the 250th anniversary, semi-quincentennial. That's the 250th anniversary of the signing of the Declaration. So there are a bunch of celebrations already being planned. Talk to us about these.
Well, 250 years of freedom will be celebrated July 4th, 2026. There are, celebrations planned for Boston, Philadelphia, New York. During the last legislative session in 2024 here, the legislature passed House Bill 1531, establishes a committee of 27 Oregonians who will plan Oregon events for celebrating the freedom, our 250 years of freedom. And so every community in Oregon, we hope, will be involved. That will really look at this as an opportunity to celebrate on this important milestone.
How did they come up with the number of 27 for that committee?
Well, it's really representation from various segments of the, legislature, the tribes, Indian tribes, really trying to cast as broad a net across Oregon as possible. So probably, like all things, it's a negotiated compromise. Many bills end up that way. And in this case, I think they have a pretty good list, a pretty complete list.
Do you know any people on there yet?
Well, Terry Timchuk of the Oregon Historical Society, not specifically mentioned, but his position, and the Oregon Historical Society will be staffing the committee that will be making these plans.
Mm. Do you have any sense of the types of celebrations that we might see here in Oregon? Well, actually, before you go there, do you have any idea of the types of celebrations that are going to be in, like as you said, Boston, Philadelphia, New York? Have you heard anything about any plans that they have had?
Yeah, big, spectacular, fireworks-oriented. Boston, of course, Boston Pops. Philadelphia will probably be the biggest one because that's, Independence Hall, sure, et cetera. But it's more going to be like a week of celebrations at these various events. And I'm sure You know, having been at, you know, New York for the dedication of the Statue of Liberty, I can tell you that they really do know how to throw a big party there. Sure. And so it's going to be spectacular. And of course, Oregon, every community should plan how to celebrate this. And so hopefully fireworks, we're going to have picnics, public events, speeches, things that really embrace this idea of 250 years of freedom.
Will we be able to drink $313 of hard liquor?
I would not recommend it, but hey, it's freedom, so make your own choice.
So I am old enough to remember the bicentennial when that happened. I was 9 years old at the time. Which was pretty cool because we had various celebrations. We had like speeches and stuff that I remember giving.
There was a big parade ships,
and absolutely.
The big, beautiful tall ships.
That's just where I was going to go with that because in 1976, Gerald Ford spoke at Independence Hall where the nation, founder, of course, approved and signed the Declaration of Independence. And then later he went to the Valley Forge and then ended up there with the reviewing of the tall sailing ships in New York Harbor. And I remember watching him ringing a bell on one of the ships. And at the time, even though I was only 9 years old, I remember thinking how cool it was that it was a Republican who was in office for the bicentennial.
You know, this is a celebration that should unite our country around the idea of freedom and independence and, the importance of self-government. So I look forward to something which we can all really get behind and enjoy.
Yeah, I sure hope so. There is a website out there if people want to go visit. It's America 250, and that's the numbers 250. So it's America250.org. And just real quick from their website, they say America 250 is a nonpartisan initiative working to engage every American in commemorating the 250th anniversary of our country. This multi-year effort from now through July 4th, 2026 is an opportunity to pause and reflect on our nation's past, honor the contributions of all Americans, and look ahead toward the future that we want to create for the next generation and beyond. So, and there's a couple other websites, too, that are related to that, and we'll make sure that we put that up on today's show page, which is 14-26 on iSpyRadio.com. And so, Greg, this has been really fascinating, and I'm so looking forward to this big celebration. Fortunately, we will have one more year before that gets here, so we can do one more show before that big anniversary, because there is always something else to talk about when it comes to the 4th. Greg, this has been a lot of fun.
Yep, and everybody celebrate their freedom, love their families, have some hot dogs, watch some fireworks, but most of all, read the Declaration. It should renew your faith in our country. Everybody, have a great 4th of July.
Absolutely. As I said at the beginning of the show, it was Ben Franklin who said, "A republic if you can keep it." And this being a presidential year with a big election, that seems more true now than ever before. On Friday, there were some incredibly important rulings from the Supreme Court that took big chunks out of the administrative, state, and federal overreach, including the Chevron Doctrine that was thrown out, which had deferred a lot of power to bureaucratic agencies. And that's a good sign that the system our founders designed is working, those checks and balances. But America is only ever truly free when patriots stand up to hold their government accountable. Because as we say every week, the best information does you no good if you don't use it. Reagan, what do you think?
I do not believe in a fate that will fall on us no matter what we do. I do believe in a fate that will fall on us if we do nothing.
It's more than a show. It's self-defense. The I Spy Radio Show.